Are you a teacher who is feeling stressed out and overwhelmed? Do you worry that you're feeling symptoms of burnout? Or are you sure you've already gotten there? Have you started to dream of doing something different? A new job? Perhaps pursuing an entirely different career, but you don't know what else you're qualified to do? You don't know how to start a job search, and you just feel stuck? If that sounds like you, I promise you are not alone. My name is Vanessa Jackson, and I am a career transition and job search coach, and I specialize in helping burnt-out teachers just like you deal with the overwhelmingly stressful nature of your day-to-day job and to consider what other careers might be out there waiting for you. You might ask, what tools do I need to find a new career? Are my skills valuable outside the classroom? How and where do I even get started? These are all questions you deserve answers to, and I can help you find them. I'm Vanessa Jackson. Come and join me for Teachers in Transition. Welcome back to another episode of Teachers in Transition. I am your host, Vanessa Jackson, a compassionate career transition and job search coach who specializes in working with burnt-out teachers who are ready for a career change but are not sure where to begin. Today on the podcast, we are going to talk about how noise affects our stress levels and our health, a teacher hack to help increase student focus right before the winter holiday break, and envisioning our ideal work environment as we continue our mini-series in the What Color Is Your Parachute book. First, we're going to talk about noise. Honestly, I never thought about noise when I was younger. Sure, my dad had lost a significant amount of hearing in one ear based on his job, and sure, it was hard to hear after going to a rock concert, but I didn't think twice about my ears or how it would relate to health. Things were much different back then. Now the company where my dad worked in his career and so many others require hearing protection, and we know just how important our hearing is. There are studies that show that exposure to noise doesn't just cause stress, it also leads to physical health problems. I have linked one study below in the show notes. And we don't always take this as seriously as we should. Take this clip from the TV show 2.5 Men, where they have returned from a loud club, and one brother is complaining to the other one.
You know what that sound is? That is the sound of the little hairs in my middle ear dying. I am talking permanent hearing loss, Charlie. Those little hairs don't grow back. Oh, wait, let's see something.
You're like an old man.
I can't listen to me. All I hear is...
We've all been there. When we've heard that ringing after being around sounds that are too loud, that is the sound of our ears sounding their own alarm. Take a moment and consider the sounds of the day. What sound wakes you up? What is the traffic noise in your area? Can you hear your neighbors? How often do sirens go by? A school building is a particularly noisy place. Gyms, cafeterias, hallways, classrooms, the car rider line, the bus duty line, announcements coming out of nowhere, that rotten fire alarm that goes off once a month. As a band director, I often had classes of 50 students or more. My record was 83. And I used to tell them that 65 kids sitting quietly still isn't very quiet. Feet move, pencils drop, paper shuffle. It all adds up. When I was in school, a million years ago, when the dinosaurs walked uphill in the snow both ways to get to school, it was a regular occurrence for us to sit in our straight cemetery rows, working quietly on a worksheet. I have no idea what the teacher was doing. I was working on my worksheet, and their desk was usually behind us. It was quiet. The teacher was probably grading work from another subject, elementary school, or from another class period, middle and high school. The emphasis today is more on project-based learning, and that often means a noisier environment. And the regression that students experience with their social skills after the pandemic means that as a teacher, we know we have to be very watchful to make sure things don't get out of hand. If you have students working on a laptop or a tablet, you also have to be monitoring that to make sure they aren't straying off into inappropriate sites, either accidentally or on purpose. That's another problem my teachers never had. Transitions are very noisy times, and the cafeteria often seems to be one of Dante's special circles. I worked at a school once in Alaska, where teachers rotated through duty assignments. It was a good idea in principle. This way, no one got stuck with outdoor bus duty all year long, because we did see temperatures get well into the negative temps there. We were also allowed to trade duty stations if we wanted. I hated cafeteria duty so much that I would start by offering to trade the outdoor duty for the cafeteria duty. If I wasn't able to trade it off, I'd come in the door wearing my hot pink noise-canceling headphones, takes 25 decibels off. I had an assistant principal ask me once why I couldn't take the noise in the cafeteria duty because I was, after all, a band director. I tried explaining that it wasn't the volume per se. It was the chaos. As a music teacher, my job was to take the chaos and turn it into music. He didn't get it. At the end of the year, same school, they made the last day a lot of fun for the kids. There were stations instead of class periods, and everyone rotated through everything at some point, a logistical feat that I did not appreciate at the time. The weather in Alaska is lovely by that point in the year, so there was a fair amount of outside time with inside time. There was also time in the gym to sign yearbooks and socialize, complete with music, dancing, and basketballs. The music was so loud. And yes, I was once again wearing the hot pink noise-canceling headphones. I tried to catch someone to ask how kids were supposed to socialize when they couldn't hear each other, but I was assured that kids liked it that loud. And I happened to look over at some point towards the bleachers that were all pulled in and closed up and saw a child who was quite literally climbing the wall created by those bleachers. I walked over to where he was, called him down and brought him over, all with visual cues because there was no way that kid was going to hear me. And then without a word, I took off my lovely noise-canceling headphones and just put them over on his head. You could watch the stress leave his body and see him unwind. I was now ready to start climbing walls, but he was better. I used that illustration later with admin, and in future years, the music wasn't quite so loud. Another year, I had my second year with one of the most challenging groups of students in my career. I love these kids, but they were tough to teach. The phrase herding cats comes to mind. I was very dedicated to making sure these kids had a great experience. My own kid was in there. So yeah, I wanted it to be great for the group. They were a wild bunch in sixth grade, but in seventh grade, I saw that their class had been moved to the last class of the day. I went to the counseling office and I said, "I don't know what I did to make you angry, but I'm very sorry and I will not do it again." And they looked at the class roster and they laughed, but told me, "Yeah, that's a tough group." I tried a variety of tactics to get the room settled and to help them to be more productive in class. Spoiler alert, nothing worked. One day I was very frazzled. I had used up all of my patience for the day, and there was just that one nerve left, and the kids were all over that nerve just walking in the door. And they weren't good kids, they were just a lot. So I asked them for 1 minute, 1 minute of total silence so that I could calm down and focus on them. And they were nice enough to give it a try. In that minute, okay, really it was just 30 seconds, barely, but in that short space of time, I could feel all of the tingles in my brain settle down as if one had taken a pot of boiling water off of the stove. I asked if any of the other students had a similar experience. A few of them did. And then they wanted to try it again. So we turned that into a moment of mindfulness, But we didn't call it mindfulness. We called it a piece of peace. That is P-I-E-C-E of P-E-A-C-E. That later got shortened to our POP moment, P-O-P. As a class, we started to see how far away we could hear. It's easy enough to hear the class next door, but could we hear farther? I encouraged the students to close their eyes to reduce visual stimulus and to reduce the need to perform for other students. I encouraged them to sit comfortably. I told them to put their hands on their knees, palm up, palm down. It didn't matter. And a funny thing happened. We actually were more focused for the rest of that class period. So we started to have our POP moment every day. I know I found it helpful, but so did the kids. They got to a point where they would remind me if I forgot. And you'd think that that minute spent on this odd little venture would waste class time, but the opposite was true. We got a lot more done on the days that we popped than on the days that we didn't. We learned that silence is never silent. Silence is simply the small sounds magnified. There is a composer named John Cage who wrote a piano piece called 4 minutes and 33 seconds, in which the piano player never plays a note. It is all about the sounds that are heard in the silence, and thus, no two performances are ever the same. Walmart recently has announced sensory-friendly hours of shopping. No music, no announcements, all things designed to make it easier on those with sensory issues. Quieter. I'd be curious to see if that also reduces incidents of customers losing control, but we may not ever have access to that data. We need more moments of quiet in our lives to combat stress, and quite literally, 1 minute of silence can yield benefits. In his 2012 book, Drop Dead Healthy, A.J. Jacobs undertakes to make himself the healthiest man alive and write about his experience in a humorous way. I highly recommend this book for both its health inspiration and the laughter it provides. One chapter is devoted to ear health, chapter 3. The noise-canceling headphones became a part of his everyday routine because he states early in the chapter, noise is one of the great underappreciated health hazards of our time. He had the opportunity to interview Arlene Bronzaft, who had conducted a study in the Washington Heights area in Manhattan, where they compared the progress of kids whose classroom heard a train every 5 minutes to students on the other side of the building, where it was quieter. By the sixth grade, the students in the quieter area were about a year ahead of the others. This chapter also points to the work of George Prochnick, who stated that even white noise and other background ambient noises could interfere with a child's language acquisition. This book really caught my attention when I read it the first time, but this was the chapter that really landed. I'll put a link to this book in the show notes. Think about what this means for the students in our schools. Think about the noise that exists everywhere, all the time, and it starts to become easier to see why they're out of control, why they need quiet in a world that has none, and also why we have less and less patience to deal with it. My teacher hack for you is to institute your own piece of peace. Let them just pop a bit and let their brains unravel and let some of the effects of a noisy building dissipate. I wouldn't call it mindfulness, though. I'd just ask the kids to do a quick experiment and then have them break it down. I wouldn't try for longer than 30 seconds that first time. You can grow and expand the time as the kids strengthen that muscle. Start with a soothing, quiet voice. I think of it as my flight attendant voice. Tell your kids, we're going to have a little experiment. Have them sit with their hands on their knees, palms up or down. They can experiment from day to day to see which they like. They should close their eyes and just begin to listen for things that are not in the room. And debrief afterwards. Ask them how they feel. Share how you felt. And then at the end of class, you assess if you feel they were a little more focused or not. And if you do this for a week or so, ask the kids if they feel it. Side note, This also became a good way for me to make sure their phones were off, or at least silent, because we didn't want to ruin the moment. If you try this hack, let me know how it worked for you. Next, we're going to move into part two of our 8-week mini-series coming from the book What Color Is My Parachute by Richard N. Bowles with Catherine Brooks. And this portion of the podcast, you may want to pause and write things down. Writing things down is one of the best ways to process how we feel about them. If you are not in a position to write things down at this moment because you are driving or otherwise busy, just put a little bookmark in your brain to come back to this part again later. Meanwhile, enjoy listening and pondering. Last week, we talked a lot about the people that we would want to work with. This week, we are going to discuss our preferred working conditions. Most of us probably just want to be treated like a human being, but let's be a little more specific and dream big dreams. We aren't just looking for a place where we would like to work. We are looking for a place where we can thrive. Why do working conditions matter? Why bother with all of the specificity? Simply put, we are most effective when we aren't having to function in spite of our surroundings. And there is no one right answer for everyone. The right answer is what's right for you. To put it into teacher speak, I'll start by saying that I spent almost all of my career working with middle school students. I guarantee that over 2/3 of you out there just thought to yourselves, ugh, middle school students, those are the worst. But I loved them. I loved their snarky little selves. On the other hand, I tend to look at elementary school teachers, and especially kinder and pre-K teachers, with awe and reverence. That is not my skill set. And despite the fact that school districts often treat teachers interchangeably like Legos, moving them around wherever they are needed at the moment, we know that we have areas where we are stronger and more effective. We know that our efficacy is hampered when we are taken out of those environments. It feels like running through Jell-O. Everything is just harder than it should be. So get out something to write with and something to write on. If you're happier typing, you're going to want to use Excel or Google Sheets here. And make sure you check the wrap text box. On your paper, you're going to want to have 4 columns. They should be titled, number 1, places I have worked. Number 2, the keys to my effectiveness, what I have liked and not liked. Number 3, distasteful working conditions. And then column 4, distasteful working conditions ranked. In the first column, list every place that you have worked, all of them. Don't forget those first jobs, babysitting, fast food, mowing yards, they all count. You can put what you liked about a place in column 2. Be specific. If you liked working with a particular group of people, see if you can puzzle out just what made that environment work so well. Column 3 is full of the things you didn't like. As an example, my very first job was at a burger place. I very much disliked always smelling like fries. Now rank all of the items in column 3. This could take a while if you've had a lot of trauma in your teaching positions. Put the worst ones on top. Looking at your ranked choices, make it a point to examine each one and determine the opposite. Based on my first job, I would have to say that I want to work in an environment that was easy on my nose. This would also explain why I didn't like the classroom in one school that was conveniently located next to the locker room area, particularly after boys' athletics let out in the morning. This next part of the exercise asks you to dream and dream big. Get another piece of paper, perhaps a poster board. In a pinch, open up some cardboard box that might be lying around. You could also cut and paste pictures into a Word document. Find pictures that fit your dream. As the book says, don't censor yourself by saying that would never happen. Add the picture anyway. When I first did this exercise, one of the most important things I was looking for was a window. As a band director, I never had a window in my classroom. Once you have finished, Step back and analyze the pictures in your dream environment vision board. What trends do you see? Do you notice settings that have similar themes? I have one friend that I just know would have put almost all outdoor pictures on there, while another one would have no outdoor pictures. Remember, there are no wrong answers. What is right for you is right for you. If you aren't seeing trends, ask a friend or a family member to look and see what they see. Sometimes we need that outside perspective. And you can always go back and add to things as you think of them. Some of us are afraid to dream big or to imagine a life beyond where we currently are. It takes time to warm up to the freedom and the idea that you're allowed to dream and that you deserve to work where you are valued and can thrive. And if you're stuck, I can help. And if you are ready to take the next step, please reach out for a complimentary discovery call to see how Teachers in Transition can help you. The life you dream of can be yours. That's the podcast for today. If you liked this podcast, tell a friend, and don't forget to rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tune in weekly to Teachers in Transition, where we discuss job search strategies as well as stress management techniques. And I want to hear from you. Please reach out and leave me a message at teachersintransitioncoaching@gmail.com or leave a voicemail or text at 512-640-9099. I'll see you next week, and remember, you are amazing. I think of it as my flight attendant voice.